Welcome to Presenting Alfred Hitchcock Presents, presented by the Ann Arbor District Library. I'm Al Sheridsma, and we have come to the end of the second season. You may recall that at the end of the first season, I asked Jack Seabrook to join me to talk about that season. Jack is the writer of the Hitchcock blog at barebonesez.blogspot.com, and he is almost done writing an entry for every single Alfred Hitchcock Presents an Alfred Hitchcock Hour episode. He will tell you how many episodes he has left. The Hitchcock blog is an invaluable resource to me and to anyone else who is interested in the program. And after enjoying talking to him at the finish of the first season, I of course wanted him back to talk about the second season. So here's my conversation with Jack. Welcome, Jack. It's good to see you.
Oh, thanks. I've been waiting for this ever since season one ended.
Well, here it is. It didn't take that long, did it?
About 3 years, right?
Yeah, about 3 years.
Wow, that's good for eight.
Yeah, I don't think ahead like that. Anyway, we just finished the second season, and the last episode of the second season is The Dangerous People, based on a story by Frederick Brown. And as I recall, when we got together last time, you talked about how you started the blog because of Frederick Brown, and you started with his stories in the Hitchcock series. And I think you emailed me at one point and said that The Dangerous People is your favorite episode of the second season and one of your favorite episodes all time. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I've always liked it. It's one of the first ones I remember seeing. I remember waking up at 2 a.m. to watch it on TV in New York, probably in the late 70s. And I was just so captivated by it and really spooked by the, like an alarm or a foghorn that keeps going off for the escaped convict, and just loving the two men in the train station with the voiceover and them both suspecting the other one. It blew me away. And I like the story too that it's based on.
So did you see the episode first or did you read the story first?
Oh, I saw the episode first. Back then it was very hard to find Frederick Brown crime fiction. He died in 72, as I recall, and his stories and books weren't really being reprinted for the most part until the 80s. And I grew up, when I was a teenager, reading his science fiction because his crime fiction was just nowhere to be found, and that's something that's become more available in the decades since then.
So this one was like one of the first ones you saw then when you were watching in the 70s.
Correct.
And it just stuck with you as being one of the favorites because it was the first or just because of all the trappings or both?
Probably both, but probably more because it was one of the first that I remember seeing.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know what you thought of it because I haven't heard your podcast yet.
That's true. Yeah. We're a little bit ahead of things here. So I have done the podcast. By the time I put this talk out, you will have heard the podcast. I liked it. I actually think I like the story better than I like the episode.
Interesting.
I think it's very well done. And the two leads, Albert Sammy and
Robert E. Harris, isn't it?
It's Robert E. Harris, yes, are terrific in it. Yeah, it's a good episode. So I know that you tend to focus on the original source. You do the series of all the Frederick Browns and then all of the Roald Dahls or whatever. So there were two other Frederick Browns in the second season. I was wondering what you thought about those. It was The Cream of the Jest and The Night the World Ended.
I really liked The Cream of the Jest. I know you weren't such a big fan of it, but I think that's the Claude Rains and James Gregory, if I remember right.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Two actors who I really like, and I enjoyed that one a lot. The Night the World Ended with, I think, Russell Collins, if I got my Russell right.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of his, mostly from seeing him on the Hitchcock Show so many times. So I liked him, but I was disappointed in that episode. I didn't think it was a very good TV show. I thought the story was better there.
Yeah. What stuck out for me with that is that one of the young kids was Harry Shearer.
I know. Isn't that funny?
It really is. And it's really interesting to see some of these people that aren't the leads that have become well-known later. What I'm working on right now is I've decided to do the Suspicion episode 4 o'clock, since it was directed by Hitchcock.
Oh, neat.
So there's these two young thieves that appear in it, and one of them is Harry Dean Stanton.
Really?
At a very young age. So it's always sort of a kick to see that kind of thing in these older shows.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that. I know, I think the story's 3 o'clock, isn't it? And the show is 4 o'clock?
Yeah, and I have no idea why they changed it from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Let's talk about A Little Sleep a little bit. That's the one right before The Dangerous People.
I like A Little Sleep quite a bit. I really think that's an interesting episode.
Yeah, I do too. That one has...
Barbara Cook.
Barbara Cook, yes. Barbara Cook and Vic Morrow. It's an interesting setup because Barbara Cook is in very little of these sorts of things. And of course, the tragic story of Vic Morrow. John Carlyle plays Barbara Cook's boyfriend, who she ditches. And I read that he had written an autobiography that was published posthumously called Under the Rainbow, because he had a relationship with Judy Garland. And so I'm currently reading it, and it's pretty fascinating. He was gay, but he also then had this relationship with Judy Garland. So it's an interesting look at sort of gay Hollywood of the 1950s.
Wow.
Anyway, so that whole show is fascinating on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most sexual story so far in the first two seasons out of everything we've seen.
Yeah, well, Barbara Cook is very sexual in the episode.
Yeah, I thought so, and I thought the script was good too, Robert C. Bennett script.
Yes, yeah, it is. So that's the last two episodes, A Little Sleep and The Dangerous People. So let's swing back around a little bit, and I thought we'd just talk briefly about the one period where you have something you never have again in the show, which is a multi-part story.
Right, I Killed the Count.
Yeah. Do you have a take on I Killed the Count?
Well, anything with John Williams in it, I'm already going to like. So there's that. I think it's an entertaining three-parter. I read the play, as I know you did too, that it was based on, and it's very different than the play. But I think it's fun. I don't know why they didn't do more. I don't know why they did that one, but they never did another one. It's strange.
Do you think it's worth three episodes?
I do. I mean, they're fairly short when you cut out the commercials and you cut out the intro and outro and credits. They're maybe 21 minutes, 22 minutes each. So it's about an hour running time total. And I do think it's worth it. It kind of takes a turn partway through with the woman character who comes in. And I also like, I think his name was Charles Davis, who plays the assistant inspector. I think he's a lot of fun in those shows. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's very good. He's also in Father and Son later on in the season, where he's a very different type of character.
And he's good there, too.
And he's very good there, yeah. Very dislikable when he's very likable. And I Killed the Count.
And that was, I counted 5 episodes, I think, including those with John Williams in season 2, which is a treat for me because I'll just watch him in anything.
Yeah. If you're counting those as 3?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Because he's also in The Rose Garden and he's in Wet Saturday.
Right. I thought The Rose Garden wasn't very good, but I liked Wet Saturday more than you did.
Yeah. I don't much care for Wet Saturday or The Rose Garden, actually. But I do like John Williams. And I think we're coming to near the end of his time on the show.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. See, he was already in the first season. He was in Back for Christmas. He was in Whodunit. He was in, I'm going to take a look at the Alfred Hitchcock Presents Companion here. The Long Shot. He's in The Long Shot.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Yeah, it is a good one. So, okay. Well, since I know that you like to focus on the source material, I was actually thinking about different people besides Frederick Brown who had more than one story telecast in this season. And there was actually a number of them. There was John Collier, who right. has three right. in the first five episodes.
Yeah.
Which I find very interesting that they did that.
Now, you know what one of them is? De Mortuis.
De Mortuis.
De Mortuis.
De Mortuis.
Your favorite
episode. Yeah.
And None Are So Blind, which you, I think you liked, and I couldn't stand. I thought that was a terrible episode.
I do like it. And I like the way they sort of successfully hide his blemish.
Right.
Because I think they do a pretty good job of that. Once you know the what's going on, if you go back and watch it again, they don't really cheat.
Yeah, you're right.
They do a nice job. It reminds me the Twilight Zone episode from later on, Eye of the Beholder, where you have the woman who's apparently disfigured.
Right.
And they have to do all of this sleight of hand to keep you from seeing the doctor's faces. Of course, it's a lot more difficult to hide a bunch of doctor and nurse's faces than one guy's blemish. But I actually think that this works a lot better than, I mean, I love Eye of the Beholder, actually, but I actually think that this episode is more successful in concealing what it's trying to conceal.
And you remember who was under the bandages when they took them off?
Yes, Donna Douglas.
Ellie Mae Clampett.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if they show it anymore. There's a MeTV ad where they do a wonderful job of sort of combining the reveal of Donna Douglas in that episode with the Beverly Hillbillies.
Really?
Every time I see it, it makes me laugh. But
they do some great commercials on MeTV.
They do, yes. So what generally is your view of those John Collier stories and those episodes?
Well, I like Wet Saturday more than you do. I think it's interesting that it was adapted on the radio several times before it was adapted on TV. And, you know, it's got John Williams and Sir Cedric Hardwick. So that's some pretty estimable actors there. De Mortuis.
De Mortuis.
De Mortuis.
De Mortuis.
I like because Henry Jones is in it and Robert Emhart, two actors who I really enjoy. But I think the story drags a little.
Yeah.
And then None Are So Blind, as you say. I think it's got good acting, but I think the story's a little boring.
Okay. There are more John Collier stories later, I believe.
Yes, but that's it for season two.
They packed him in at the start of season two. If you were not a John Collier fan,
right.
They could have lost you for the year. So the other ones that had more than one story, A.A. Milne has two episodes.
Two great episodes, I think.
I like Mr. Finlater much more than The Man Greatly Beloved, actually.
Really? I like A Man Greatly Beloved. I think that little girl is terrific.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she is.
Isn't it amazing that A.A. Milne wrote these kind of stories? I mean, you grow up knowing him for Winnie the Pooh, and then you see this, and it's like, wow, he really had a little more broad type of story than I thought.
Absolutely. He wrote some mystery novels. There's one that's been sitting on my pile of books to read for a very long time.
The Red House?
The Red House. Have you read it?
Yeah, I read that years ago, but I don't remember what it was about.
Well, I'm hoping to get to that at some point. Once I get done reading John Carlyle's book and some of these other things I'm trying to get to.
The other one with multiples, you got Thomas Burke?
Yes.
With one of the best episodes, I think, of the season. Hands of Mr. Honorable.
Yes, I agree. And then the other one is Evan Hunter.
Yeah, with really strong episodes. Number 22, which is terrific, with Rip Torn and Russell Collins again.
Yes.
And then what was the other one? Vicious Circle, which is good, but I don't think it's as good as number 22.
No, I don't think so either. And then Hitchcock directed three episodes. I think two of them are very strong. You may think two of them are very strong, but they're different two, I think.
That's definitely true. I cannot stand Mrs. Lanford's secret. I think the only good part of the episode is the little silent scene where she imagines the guy killing, I think he's killing his wife. But Mary Scott is the actress?
Yes.
She just doesn't work for me at all.
So it sounds to me like, just we've been talking here, that the actors influence you a lot.
I think that's fair, definitely. You know, the third Hitchcock episode, I think, is one of his best. One for the Road, is that it? No, One More Mile to Go.
I get those titles mixed up all the time.
But boy, that he made that right before he made Vertigo. And the whole beginning sequence, that's silent, where the camera tries to get into the house where he's killing his wife and it's off by the window. I just think that is just a great job of directing. And you know, he probably didn't spend much time planning these, and they filmed them in 3 days from what I understand. So it's even more impressive, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And you can see it as a predecessor to Psycho in the first half of Psycho. Once she gets to the Bates Motel, it's totally different. But that whole sequence of her driving, Hitchcock was probably influenced by what he did previously in One More Mile to Go.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know that this is the only season that had an Emmy for writing. Fog Closing In, not particularly impressed with the episode, but James Cavanaugh won an Emmy for that script. That was the only Emmy they won for writing.
Ever for the entire run of the series? Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Of course, the directing Emmy is coming up. You're about to see it.
Yes, yes.
The Glass Eye.
Yes.
And as far as the writing, I made a note that out of the 39 episodes, 33 of them were written by 7 scriptwriters.
Really?
So you've got just a fairly small group doing most of the teleplays in this season.
So that's Cavanaugh, Francis Cockrell, and Sterling Siliphant, possibly. And
yeah, Bernard C. Schoenfeld, and Sarah Rudley, and Robert C. Dennis, and Marion Cockrell, who's got a different tone to her shows than her husband.
Yeah, very much so. Since you mentioned the award for writing, I have to say that Fog Closing In is one of my least favorite episodes of the whole season.
Why is that?
Well, it's now been a while since I watched it and since I did the show about it, but I just remember that it just doesn't hang together for me. I like George Grizzard. I think it's kind of interesting, the situation that they have together with Phyllis Thaxter and George Grizzard's characters, but it just doesn't translate to me properly, so that when she's killing her husband at the end, I just don't buy it. It just sort of falls apart.
Oh. Well, that's another example of the actors, because Phyllis Thaxter is someone I really, really respect, and she's in so many episodes. I just always enjoy her, but I do agree it's a disappointing episode.
So it surprises me that that's the one that won for writing. It seems to me there are plenty of other ones better written than that, but that's how awards go.
True. I thought another thing I think notable about the second season is that it was when the Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Magazine started publishing, and they adapted 3 stories for the latter part of the season from the first 3 issues of the magazine, 1 story each. And that would be something that would continue on through the series. They'd be pulling stories from their own magazine.
Right, so the first one they do is A Bottle of Wine. What were the other ones?
Martha Mason Movie Star.
Ah, okay.
And A Little Fleet was the third issue.
Ah, okay, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, now that we've mentioned Martha, I would say that's probably my least favorite episode of the season. And you talked about seeing the dangerous people for the first time in the 70s. I had a similar experience, only my experience was with Martha Mason, where I discovered, I think it was Nick at Night at that time, was showing Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and I thought, oh, I haven't seen any of those in ages. I really should check that out. And so I turned it on, and the first one I watched was Martha Mason Movie Star, and it was a huge letdown.
Yeah, it's a dud.
And I thought, well, this was a show I was all excited about. So it could be that that stuck with me all these years. But I decided after going through this season that if I was going to pick what I think is the worst episode, that that's the one.
That's up there for me, along with Mr. Blanchard's Secret and None Are So Blind. Those three would be my least favorite.
Okay. And see, I love Mr. Blanchard's Secret. None Are So Blind is in my top half.
Have you watched the Flintstones? Have you watched the Flintstones version of Mr. Blanchard's Secret? It's worth a quick look because they have that song with Alvin Brickrock instead of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes, yes, I did watch it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, there's other things like that that sometime in the future I may be looking into. There's like Mad Magazine versions of things and so on. And I did do a short piece on the first episode of the Mystery Magazine, but I can't really follow it along the way. I don't have all the issues. In fact, I'm probably going to be checking with you on some shows to see if you have the story.
I think I have everything.
So, yes, I actually really do love Mr. Blanchard's Secret. I just think it's so odd and wonderful. So I put together a list of what my five favorite were for the season. And I guess this is the order. I might say no particular order, but these are the five. My favorite, without a doubt, is Crack of Doom. I just think that's wonderful. And then I would go with The Manacled and One More Mile to Go, and then Mr. Blanchard's Secret, and then The Hands of Mr. Ottermole would be my five.
Well, I didn't pick just five. I have more than five.
That's fine. Let's hear them.
I'd say from your five, you don't go for the humorous ones so much. You like the suspenseful ones more.
I prefer the suspenseful ones, though there are some humorous ones I do care for. The Three Dreams of Mr. Finlater is one I'm very fond of.
I like Filled with Kindness with Hume Cronin and Carmen Matthews, where they're mother and sister, and he's always distracted looking at his birdcage, and they're trying to burn down their house.
Yes.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, there's that wonderful moment where they both light a match.
Yeah. And I like Conversation Over a Corpse with the women. And like Crack of Doom is fantastic.
Yeah, I love Crack of Doom. I would say Conversation Over a Corpse might be my number six. That's Carmen Matthews again.
Yeah, I like John Brown's Body with Russell Collins, where he pretends to be crazy at the end. And Crackpot with Robert Emhart, where he tricks, I think it's just Biff Elliott. The other is the lead. He tricks him into confessing.
Is it Biff McGuire in that?
Biff McGuire, that's it.
And I think it's Mary Scott again, your favorite Mary Scott.
Yeah, she's more bearable in that one. Barely. The Manacles, I think you mentioned.
Yes.
Love The Manacles. Number 22 with the police lineup. And that also has Russell Collins with Rick Horn. One for the Road. I love David Wayne. The Cream of the Jet, I really enjoyed. Oh, I'm sorry. But see, again, I mixed up One for the Road and One More Mile to Go. One More Mile to Go is David Wayne.
Yes.
One for the Road is the glass of poison drink.
Yes.
The Hands of Mr. Ottermole, A Little Sleep, Dangerous People, and then I just love The Indestructible Mr. Weem.
Ah, yes, that is a good one.
One of the funniest ones, I think. It was interesting because if you read, I think in the Hitchcock Companion, there's something from the writer of Mr. Weems, and he says that was the first funny episode that they did, and they had to sneak it in while Hitchcock was away somewhere. But if you look at season two, that's not true at all. There were a number of humorous episodes before that, including Conversation Over a Corpse.
Yeah, I thought that quote from him was interesting because it's true. There are a number of funny ones before, and I don't think they were sneaking anything in. He seemed to think that they snuck it in and then they never showed it again. Well,
Right. It's
true that it wasn't in the reruns for the summer, for the season, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Hitchcock hated it. So, yeah, I thought that was an interesting quote, and I think he was probably wrong.
Yeah, as to the reruns, that's something that really knocks me out, is that it really was a season back then. They did 39 episodes and 39 weeks. There were no reruns during the season. There were no preemptions. And then they'd have 13 reruns in the summer, and then they're back to new episodes. And imagine today on a streaming series, we're happy to get 6 episodes, and that's a season. But back then, imagine cranking out 39 in a row in 39 weeks. You film them in 3 days. You got to do the sound, the editing, and get it up there. It's amazing at the level of quality that they consistently reach.
Yeah, and it's not surprising that some of the episodes are duds. It's not just that they have to put it all together with casting and directors and sets and so on and so forth. They have to pick stories, and they have to then have the teleplay writers write the teleplays off of the stories. And if you need 39 stories every year, you're going to end up doing some stories that just aren't that great. I don't take it to heart that there are duds along the way. There's so many good ones.
Yeah, it's just very impressive to me how they were able to do it back then. And of course, the show's in my 2 favorite colors, black and white.
Yes. Right.
I always wonder if they stopped showing the series in 65 because they just thought it wouldn't work in color and everything was pushing to color right around then.
Ah, well, that's an interesting thought. I think Hitchcock was sort of getting tired of it. He certainly slacked off on his directing for the show.
Yeah.
He did, 4 episodes the first season, I think? And there's 3 this season. And by the time you get to the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, he only does 1 for the entire run of the hour.
That's true.
So, yeah, I think that he was probably worn out with the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
But yeah, it's impossible to imagine the show in color, except in the 80s version.
Which I think goes to prove why they shouldn't have done it in color.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the 80s version, for the most part, is just stressful.
Yes.
And I was so excited in the mid-80s when it came back, and then I started watching them first run, and they were just terrible.
Yeah, they really are. They do end up doing, ultimately, some original teleplays, but a lot of them are based on the original shows. And the original shows are just fine the way they are. And for the most part, when they take those shows, they take them to the extreme so that they just don't work.
Right.
Again, I've been working on 4 o'clock, and they did an 80s version of that. And it has no subtlety whatsoever. It's just awful.
Yeah, that was the word I was thinking, is the subtlety. I think that the censorship in the 50s and early 60s forced them to be more creative. And I think in the 80s, when there was less censorship, there was, as you say, less subtlety and less creativity, and they suffered as a result.
Yeah, they really do. So in the Alfred Hitchcock Presents Companion, they have this little section in the front where they give an assessment of each season. And I was going to read the assessment and get your reaction. And they say the second season pulled more stories from English writers, and the locale for a major amount of the plots was of foggy England instead of America. Still, this didn't keep the ratings from going higher on the charts, and the fan mail grew. There are certain ingredients necessary for mass appeal, said Hitchcock, describing the stories he wanted to direct. But it's all a question of the quality of that mass appeal. People get the impression that mass appeal has to be cheap. That's not true. Of course, attainment is difficult. When you're asking writers for quality, they'd rather save it for their movie or their play. There'll always be what I call play-in-the-drawer writers. You know the kind. They sit down at their desks and begin to think. Suddenly a light comes into their eyes. They look around furtively to see if anyone is watching, open up the drawer, and make a secret note of the idea for future reference. Classics such as Wet Saturday and The Handsome Mr. Ottermole were familiar stories done before on other mystery anthologies. One highlight of the second season was the only multi-part dramatization, I Killed the Count, broadcast over a period of 3 consecutive weeks. And that's what they say about the second season.
I don't think the evidence supports their claim that it was more English locales and foggy London or foggy countryside. Wet Saturday is British, and Handsome Mr. Ottermole which is one of the best episodes, is definitely Fogs of London. But I don't think that there's an overabundance of British episodes in season two. Do you?
No, I don't think so either. I thought that was interesting that that was how they began that.
And I guess I still count as in England too, so there's...
Well, that's true.
Five episodes right off the top of our head. But for me, season one, they're still finding their way. That's a little bit almost primitive in some of the way that the episodes are filmed. They pull from all different sources, radio, TV, stories. And then season two, I feel like, is a bit of a leap forward in quality of the filming and the way the episodes look. And listening to your podcast and your reviews of the episodes, I feel like you were disappointed in a fair number of episodes in season two. But I think that there's a lot of quality there, both in the humorous ones and the suspenseful ones. And I think as it gets toward the end, there's some real strong episodes. Oddly enough, I don't know if it was a complete coincidence or if they saved the best for last. I don't know.
I think that you're probably right that there were ones that I was disappointed with. You have emailed me before saying that I didn't really give my opinion of an episode in some of the podcasts. And yeah, I guess that's sort of true. It's not that I don't intend to do it. It's just that sometimes it just doesn't seem like it comes up. And that doesn't mean I don't like them. I'll try to do better about giving my opinion.
That's something I always want to hear towards the end, what you thought of each episode.
Good. It is true that if you watch them more than once, usually you tend to appreciate them more. But going back to Martha Mason Movie Star, when I first went back to Hitchcock with Nick at Night, and that was the first one I saw, I didn't stop after that. I continued to watch, and they were showing them in order. So I came in like right at that point in season two. So the next one I saw was The West Warlock Time Capsule. And then the next one after that was Father and Son. And at the time, I didn't care for any one of those three. So I had this very bad opinion of a lot of what the end of season two was. And going back to it, I still don't think a whole lot of Father and Son. And I don't like Martha Mason, but I really got to appreciate Wes Warlock quite a bit. I thought I was very unfair to this in my initial reaction to this show. And I think it's really quite good. I think it's one of the better episodes of the season. And then, yes, you're right. They finished strong with Mr. Weems and with A Little Sleep and with The Dangerous People.
Yeah. Can be dangerous to go back and watch things you watched many years ago because you're a different person and you appreciate different things, and sometimes something you really like doesn't look that good and something you didn't like all of a sudden looks good.
Yeah. And I think I've watched all the episodes in the third season, but a lot of them I haven't seen for a while, so I'm not sure altogether, but I do know that I think the first two episodes are really strong.
I think each year it gets better, in fact, as a group. I think the third, the fourth, the fifth, I think maybe my favorite season of all.
Okay, well, maybe I'll actually get there one day.
I hope so.
We'll see. So, yeah, so what's your assessment then, generally, of the third season?
The third season?
The upcoming season for us.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot of good stuff, starting with the glass eye. I think they were really hitting their stride. I'd have to look at it in more detail to say more than that.
Exactly, yeah. And I actually have it right here, third season. As I said, I remember the first two. The second one is Mail Order Prophet.
Oh, that's good.
E.G. Marshall and Jack Klugman. Yeah, I think that one's very good.
Well, anything with Jack Klugman is worth watching.
Absolutely. I agree completely. Jack Klugman is, I was going to say, a highly underrated actor, but I'm not sure exactly if that's true. But people tend to know him if they still know him, which is another aspect of some of these shows, is that you end up with these actors who were a very big deal at the time that have been largely forgotten. But if people still know Jack Klugman, they usually think of him, I think, in terms of The Odd Couple and Quincy.
Quincy, sure.
Though his Twilight Zone episodes, I think, people remember pretty well.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And
So I'm looking forward to those. There were actors in this second season. Well, Russell Collins is a great example. People who were tremendous actors and really enriched certain episodes that people just, for the most part, don't know today. And that's a shame.
That's true. Well, they were character actors even then. John Williams and Robert Empard and Phyllis Baxter. These are all people that once you start watching these shows over and over, you really come to appreciate the craft that they put into it.
Yes. Okay, so do you have anything you'd like to add about the second season?
No, just that I hope you keep doing these podcasts for a long time because they're really enjoyable.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm not a spring chicken. I'm going to keep going as long as I can. We'll see where I can get.
Well, I have 9 to go, and then I'll be done.
I was going to ask you that. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yep, I'll be done this summer, and then I'm going to hopefully edit it into a book.
Great.
Yeah. Then I'll be able to answer your questions about the third season with no problem.
So do you know offhand what the 9 are that you haven't done? Were there any from the second season?
No, I finished the second season.
Okay.
In fact, one of the reasons I finished it was because I was hoping we'd be having this conversation.
Ah, okay. Good. Well, just tell anyone who's listening that Jack writes me an email after every podcast, which I thoroughly appreciate. And so I hope you keep doing that.
You bet.
And a few years down the line, let's get together and talk about season 3.
Well, great. I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you, Jack, for doing this. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, my pleasure. It was fun.
I want to thank Jack again for the conversation, and you can read all of Jack's Hitchcock blogs at barebonesez.blogspot.com. And as he said, he'll be finished with the entire run this summer, so you can catch up on every episode there, and then buy his book when he's got that all set to go. Here, we're just getting started on season 3. But first, I'm going to look at the premiere episode of the series Suspicion, 4 o'clock, starring Nancy Kelly and E.G. Marshall, and directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
I hope you will join us then. Good night.